All right, 8:15, having arrived, we're going to call the Education Finance Committee to order. And I would like to welcome everyone in attendance. You know, next week is Alternative Education Week. There's a proclamation in all the members' packets by the governor, Governor Dayton. And so today we're going to talk about, we're going to hear from alternative learning centers, alternative learning programs from around the state. And I can say personally, because I've talked to a number of students over the years from my area who have come down, and I'm sure members, you've probably talked to several students in alternative learning programs, and these programs are effective. These programs work. I have no doubt with some of the students that I have talked with that they would not have graduated, not have finished school without this alternative learning experience. And so, members, I'm looking forward to today, and we have a number of, and why don't we do this right now? Everyone here who is involved as a student or teacher or administrator with an alternative learning center or alternative learning program, you just please stand right now if you're a student or member. And thank you. Very good. Thank you for being here. So with that, members, we have a little housekeeping first. Let's do minutes. We do have a quorum. Do I hear someone to make a representative move. Radenovich moves the February 5th, 2013 minutes. Any debate on those? If not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The minutes are approved. So I will have you introduce yourselves, and we'll begin, and welcome.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. I am Sue Veelan. Thank you, members of the House here, the Finance Committee. Being able to be here is really an honor for us. I am a retired member of an area learning center. I was director for 20-plus years in central Minnesota, and I'll give you a little bit of information on that as we go along. My job is to kind of give you an overview of what ALCs do within our state, and then I'll speak specifically about our program at Freshwater Education District, which is around the Staples area. That's our main headquarters. In 1987, the Minnesota legislature authorized the establishment of area learning centers as one of the first choice programs in the state. This is for students at risk of not graduating. You have picked up the history of educational reform in Minnesota at the back here. This was produced by Wayne Jennings and gives you a little bit of history of some of the reforms that have happened in Minnesota, and it talks about area learning centers and some of the other reform programs in Minnesota. Eligible students meet one or more of 12 criteria as established also by the legislature. Last year, 160,000 students were served through Area Learning Center and alternative programs. This is about 18% of the student population in the state of Minnesota. About 75% of this 160,000 were served in extended year programs. These are programs that were authorized and funded to serve students either after the regular school day or during the summer. And that might be before school or after school. In a report by the RAND Corporation called Summer Counts, research in California reported summer learning programs can prevent loss of knowledge and skills that occur over summer months, especially for low-income students. And then there's also compelling research completed by Carl Alexander of Johns Hopkins that reports that summer is a season of huge risk and setbacks for low-income students and youth in the U.S. This report was published in Lasting Consequences of Summer Learning Gap and in the American Sociological Review. A new version for summer school was part of the report by the National Summer Learning Institute. ALCs, or alternative learning programs, are first required to serve students ages 16 through 21 who are at risk of not graduating from their regular high school. These students are typically behind in credits for graduation, and they may meet other at-risk requirements. They score low on standardized tests. They may be teen parents. They may have issues with chemicals. There are 12 criteria in which they can qualify for service at an area learning center. And most of these students are full-time students at the area learning center. They're served either in independent study model or a traditional school day full-time model. Many students are coming only to make up credits. They've failed a course and need to make up credits for graduation. Our middle level programs serve 12 to 15 year olds, and they are in usually a separate site or at some cases a school within a school program. And if an ALC has established a middle level program, either a separate site or school within a school, then they may serve students grades kindergarten through 8 in what we call targeted services. And this is either in the summer or before or after the regular school day. Teachers in our area have moved from serving them in June to right before school starts in August, and that helps them come back from that learning gap that they may have experience during the summer months, and that has been very effective to get them ready and back on track for the following school year. The extended education revenue to support this follows the students. If a student is served, then there is funding available. The 2010 legislative audit, and you have a summary of that that also you picked up and is worth reading. That indicated showed that students served in extended year programs, kindergarten through 8, scored higher on assessments and made more progress in standardized assessments than their regular peers. Freshwater Education District started serving at-risk students and students that might be ready to drop out long before the ALC legislation went into effect. We started in the late 70s in a little white house north of the school, serving students who are at risk of dropping out. And we were one of the first state-designated ALCs after the 1987 legislation. Currently, we offer the following for our 13-member districts. We have 5 senior high sites in 5 different locations. And they serve about 422 students year-round. We have 1 middle-level site, and that's the one that sometimes is very difficult to serve students at that middle level. We have 6 credit recovery sites within our high schools. So they provide services for students to make up credits. And then we have 16 elementary and middle level sites within our districts. And we provide services for 1,649 students in 2012 within those 16 sites. So we served a total of almost 2,000 students. 62% of those were the targeted services, that K through 8 age group. We also offer adult diploma programs. We've had parents who have struggled to get their students to finish high school within our programs, and then one came back and said, I suppose I got them to finish, I better get my high school diploma. And at age 52, she did that. Our oldest student was in their 60s. We also work very closely with the GED programs. Sometimes the Area Learning Center isn't quite right. They have a need to go a different route, and so we work closely with GED programs. We have a strong emphasis on getting students ready for the next stage of education or for a career. Our mission is to provide those needed services for at-risk students. We also work very closely for career and tech. To make sure that they have some skills when they leave our programs. At this time, I want to introduce Julie Warner from Wright Technical Center, and she will give you some further information.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. As Sue said, my name is Julie Warner, and I'm director of Wright Technical Center in Buffalo. Wright Technical Center is a high school career and technical center that started back in 1972. However, by 1974, similar to Sue's situation, we realized that we had a large number of students who needed academic help. So in 1974, we started offering after-school programming in academic areas. In 1990, we became an area learning center. We added a middle-level program, and we added targeted services. Today, we have about 120 full-time students in our traditional ALC day program. I believe the relevance of career and technical education coursework is one of the keys to our success. We can engage students and motivate them to learn and to graduate. I strongly believe that every student needs to be prepared for career and for post-secondary education. While academic rigor is very important, it means nothing to an ALC student if they're not engaged and they can't apply their knowledge. We know that current tech education has proven to decrease dropout rates and to improve academic performance with ALC students, due in part, I believe, to our instructional methods and our hands-on and project-based learning. About one-third of our 11th and 12th graders at Wright Technical Center are enrolled in about one of our nine courses. We also have about 20 students who are our traditional day programs who work after school in a work-based learning program. In a work-based learning program, we can match them up to people in the business community and in industry so that they can have some models for success. We also offer a variety of extended day programs in our district. Last year we had 97 high school students in our summer school program, and we had 47 students who were 10th, 11th, and 12th grade coming in after school for credit recovery. We also have a small independent study program, and we have a teen parent program and that middle level program. Targeted services is an option that we offer for all of our member districts. We serve 10 districts in the greater Wright County area. Last year, we served 2,455 students in targeted services. The Delano School District, which Representative McDonald is not here today, but his home district, was one of the first districts that I worked with back in 1990 to start targeted services with them. Since then, Delano has offered every year an extended day after school or summer program for the bottom 10% of the class in their district. Recently, the Department of Education announced that Delano Elementary School had been nominated as a National Blue Ribbon School by the United States Department of Education. This program honors schools which have achieved high achievement in performance. Delano Elementary School was only one of seven in Minnesota that was nominated. And it's not the first time Delano has been a Blue Ribbon School. Targeted services has helped their students succeed, and I'm proud to say that we played a small part in their success. The success of targeted services, Sue also talked about it, was reported in the legislative audit report. So again, I would thank you for your time. If you're interested in any more information on an area learning center such as Wright Tech and our current technical tie-in, please feel free to contact me. Thank you.
All right, Ms. Warner, thank you so much. I think we'll do this because we have one question, and we're kind of,
okay.
I see just four different areas. Ms. Beelen kind of gave an overview, so I think we'll take questions for Ms. Beelen. I know we had one there, and then we've got three testifiers, kind of administrators of the program. Then we'll take questions after that, and then there's four students who will testify. We'll allow them to testify, take questions after that, and then we have Superintendent Froak here, and then we'll take questions. So, Representative Quam, you were on for, I think, Ms. Beelen, if you would come forward, and then we'll continue after the questions there. I should have stopped before she sat down. So, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and having been a past board member and chaired a board that had, it was Zed Education District and had an ALC, I really appreciate your programs on that. I'm wondering, how do you, you're helping with graduation, we've had testimony about keeping track of graduating on time and that. Does it go back to the host district? And then how do you, coordinate some of that? Because we had different graduation requirements of classes or credits between our different schools. And if you have 13, I would think that'd make your bookkeeping a little difficult.
Yeah. Ms. Beelen?
Thank you for your question, Representative Quam. That does make bookkeeping and record keeping sometimes almost a nightmare. You are correct. The law states that they can graduate from their home district or the district in which the ALC is located. Most of ours choose to graduate from their home district. All of the students in area learning centers must meet the same state standards as all of the students in Minnesota. In addition, some districts might have an additional requirement. Some of them have a business education course that they're required. We will help them meet that within their area. We do have a few students who say, well, your requirements here at the Wadena site in Wadena is a little bit less than, I don't have to take that business course if I graduate from Wadena. And then they will get that Wadena diploma, but they have to meet the state standards the same as every other student in Minnesota.
Thank you. Representative Radinovich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Beelen, I have a question about a lot of the focus for this committee is seeing programs that tie students to career readiness. And could you speak to, or do you have any quantitative data on what students are doing after they leave the ALC programs, whether there's services that connect them to a career or to a 2 or 4 year school or furthering their education?
Ms. Beelen.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt and Representative Radinovich.
Thank you.
even Bravo. That's pretty close.
Give her an A for the day.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm retired. I don't need it anymore. Anyway, we do provide career services. It is a big emphasis. It was a big part of original legislation that some career readiness and careers were very much a part of that. Can I say we can track all students? My goodness, we can't track them to the next site they're going to sometimes. Do we have a lot of quantitative data? No, and that's one thing I think we could work on is getting more quantitative data. We do expose them to a lot of careers. We do expose them to what's available for them, and we do help them with those career readiness skills. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Kate, I think we'll move to Ms.
Kathy
Johnson.
Kathy Johnson is our next speaker from Mankato Central High School.
Mr. Chairperson and members of the committee, thank you for allowing us to be here today. I have the privilege to represent Mankato Public Schools and the Area Learning Center that is located in Mankato. Our Area Learning Center has a day high school program. It has summer programs. It has night school programs. It has a middle school program, and it also has targeted services for students in grades K through in grade school. We know that the National Center for Educational Statistics reports that 3.8 million young people today have not completed high school and are not currently enrolled in a high school program. as I work with students in my job at Central High School, I always start, when they come into our program and enroll, I always start by asking them, why are you choosing an alternative program, and why didn't the school that you were last at work for you? The overriding responses that I receive from these students is, I did not or could not fit into that school. I was bullied and could not find the help that I needed. I had no relationship, or I had a negative relationship with the school staff. I need to work for part of the school day to help support my family. I am homeless. I have a substance abuse problem. I am a teen pregnant, or I'm a pregnant teen or a parenting teen, and I don't have the resources to go to school and afford daycare during the day. So I would like to talk to each of those and just provide some information about the Mankato Area Learning Center and how we meet those needs of those students. Our student-to-teacher ratio is smaller than an average school, a traditional setting. Our classes are often 15 students or smaller. Each student, when they enter our program, is assigned an advisor that develops an individualized and continuous learning plan that addresses needs in academics, social skills, and career readiness skills. And that advisor meets with those students every Friday to help plan for their success. I was bullied. All Central School staff are trained in positive behavior and intervention supports. This allows us to respond to inappropriate behavior in a way that teaches correct behavior instead of focusing on a punitive system. I need to work to support my family. We have that work experience career readiness program, and it allows students to work for part of their school day and receive credit for graduation. It also allows us to provide them with a flexible school day. I am homeless. At Central, we are in tune to the students' living situations, and we work closely with the social workers to identify community supports. We provide free breakfast for all students. We look at transportation and other access needs, along with other essential daily living needs. I struggle with substance abuse. For 7 years now, we have provided students with a sober environment, Central Freedom School. And in those 7 years, we've served over 250 students. It is a recovery-based program. It includes on-site chemical health counselors who meet with students individually and in a group setting each and every day. This gives students that safe, sober environment, because we know when students are coming back to our communities from inpatient treatments, they're also going back to their using friends, and research shows that they struggle with their commitment to sobriety. I'm a pregnant teen or a parenting teen. We have a teenage pregnancy and parenting program. Along with classes, students are enrolled in to understand the needs of their developing children. We have on-site free daycare, which allows the students to complete their high school education and know that their children are on-site and well cared for. I have to say this, both Central Freedom School and our teenage pregnancy and parenting program are available to us only through the strong support of our community and continuous donations. In summary, area learning centers provide our at-risk students an opportunity, a choice, and a sense of empowerment to continue their education in spite of life circumstances that have overwhelmed them to a point of losing hope in their futures. Thank you.
Ms. Johnson, thank you. Ms. Weber.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here. As I'm speaking, your assistant, will be passing out handouts. I had a pre-meeting before this meeting, so I didn't get them out ahead of time.
And Ms. Weber, would you introduce yourself?
Lisa Weber from Detroit Lakes, Minnesota.
I'm the
principal of the Area Learning Center. We became a licensed Area Learning Center in the fall of 2000. We had one original partner with Frazee District, local district, and we service Lake Park Audubon. Since then, we currently serve 2,000 students. This year we've hired 192 students and we have 32 sites. The reason I tell that story is because one of the things that area learning centers do is we service areas. And as you've heard in Sue's story as she started it out this morning, is we are able to service a lot of students in a lot of different communities and surrounding communities, and we meet a lot of needs. Students come to us for very reasons and a lot of different needs. As you look at the sheet that's being handed out to you now, it lists partnering programs. There's so many stories to tell and so much information to give. I'm handing out a fact sheet that really hopefully will just trigger some of the things that we talk about today. Starting out with Targeted Services Partnership Programs. This lists some of the partnerships and programmings that we bring. There's two things we try to do in Detroit Lakes Area Learning Center for programming, and you'll hear me talk about them this morning in my 3 minutes. I'll talk really fast. Okay, I'm really hoping for 3 minutes. Layering of services, because as you've heard in the testimonies before me, students come to us with such a broad variety of needs. There isn't one program to meet all the needs, but all learners can learn, and all students need to move forward with an education and have the ability to be productive citizens. The other thing you're going to hear me talk about is satellite services. We need to bring educational programs to where learners are. We need to meet them in their communities where they are. And the more we are able to do that, the more we will see success. So when you look at that list of targeted services partnership programs, and if you're aware of where Detroit Lakes, Minnesota is, you'll see that some of our programs are quite a ways away. One of the things we try to do is go to those communities and work with those teachers and those programs in their communities. If you flip to the back side of the second page, in bold and italics, you'll see, anytime I do that, going back to the auditor's report, it talks about the statewide need and the value of increased test scores for students who participate in targeted services programs. We can, through a satellite services model, bring those programs to schools that don't have access to ALCs. We can bring those through satellite services to those programs and are able to do that. And I'll tell you how we do that through Detroit Lakes. If you take a look at it, it says DL-ALC and partnering district. What ALC has been able to do, what I've been able to do through programming, is we offer the extended day, extended year, 0.2 ADM. We offer that programming to them. I hire through Detroit Lakes, provide the programming and the experience of programming we have. We've been an ALC K-12 program since 2000. We provide the MDE compliance, the program that needs to be in place. We do the MARS reporting, the payroll, the attendance and membership. We provide the business and staffing, the business office staffing and services. What we do with the partnering district is that we go to that district. We hire their staff. I work with their staff on the resources they have. The first thing you do is say, what are the student needs in your district? What is the programming that you need in your K-8? Student needs always drive the bus. The second thing you do is you look at the resources. What are the resources in your district? And then what are the resources in your community? Then we start going down the list of talking about shared programming. What are the facilities? What do you have available? And then shared administrative oversight. High school programming, same partnerships. I won't list them all, but when you take a look at high school programming, there are an awful lot of programs that we offer in Detroit Lakes. When you get to the high school programming, then we start looking at layering. In the independent study programming in Detroit Lakes, you'll notice that we have independent study programming, a culture club. We do an Ojibwe Knowledge Bowl, math science tutoring for credits, remediation programming, some algebra, algebra 2, and math, with the additional support in the classes they're currently taking. So when they fail the courses, we not only have them redo the courses, but we do the remediation for the courses that they're currently in. So not only credit recovery, but support for what they're in at the same time. Extended day, extended year programming. When we get to the seat-based program, if you can take a look at the brochure I handed out, our seat-based program, you'll see an awful lot of programs in there. We have recovery school, two pregnant and parenting teen programs, one's after school, for some of those students that it's appropriate for them to stay in their day traditional program, but they still need the parent education programming after school. They still need their community connections with the community partners. We layer programming. We have a chemical health program that is an intervention program in the seat-based program, and we have a recovery school, which is a school within a school for those students who have successfully completed inpatient or outpatient treatment to support them in their sobriety. We layer programming to meet the needs of learners of where they're at so that they can continue in their educational journey. You can look at our community partners. Once again, partnering with those high school programming in their districts where they're at to meet the needs of where they are. as we continue to go along, does it work on the front side of the second page? I provided some statistics. I won't go through everything. We do track. Does it work? I pulled from some of the research we've done in the past at our sites. In Detroit Lakes, summer of 2000, reading assessments in one of our three-week sessions. You can see grade by grade, but if you look at the last line, 85% of the 69 students maintained or increased performance when assessed in the fall, and we were testing in reading assessments. The next block down, when it talks about in 2008, targeted services students grades through one, once again, we looked at reading. We are using the DRA. 98% demonstrated significant growth compared to peers. Average percent of growth in peers on the same test was 43%. That was average growth. In spring, NWEA MAP test for fall MAP scores in math composite scores, meaning overall math, not looking at substrand scores, but composite scores, average growth was 23% higher. That's significant growth. And if you look at summer regression, you know, when you're looking over the summer, there's typical regression. Regression was not a big factor for those students who participated in spring, or from spring to fall MAP scores with those kids that participated. Middle school students, who some of our programs are required for, some of our programs require it for credit recovery. So we also offer it for skills remediation. We want to do those skills gap programs. When we ask those students about the Jumpstart programs, those programs that are offered in August to make sure they're getting ready for school to start, 96% reported themselves it was helpful. Even those students who were resistant, that didn't want to be there, said, yes, this benefited me and helped me get a good start to school. And if you look at the back page, does it work for high school programming? Our high school program has 48 community partners. 48 community partners work with our alternative program. We can take up to 72 learners. When you're looking at programming and being fiscally responsible, 48 community partners come to the table. We graduate 25 to 35 students from our seat-based program. We are an intervention-based program. What that means is when students come into our program and are truant, we found out why, and we address the problems on why. If you're coming to school and you're truant because you have issues with anxiety, depression, chemical health, we work with our families and our students, find out why, and address those needs. 98% of our students follow through with interventions that impede with academic progress because they want to stay in our program. And it works. It works. And you'll hear that testimony in a little bit. 94% of the students who do leave our program, and I say approximately because we were pretty solid on our statistics up to 2 years ago, and I did an update. I need to get more exact on that, but we're approximately 94% leave our program, return. In summer of 2011, 115 enrolled, and once again, those places are those the places that we served are on there that we included in that statistic. 83 students completed 131 credits. You see the statistics for 2012 because I'm over my 3 minutes. when you look at 2012-2013, we are right now at 182 students enrolled, and you can see that we're reaching a farther range of communities I discussed before, Waban, Monaga, even more places. So as we learn in our auditor's report, credit recovery isn't just about credits. It's about a whole lot more. Our students come to us with a variety of needs. We meet those needs so that they can get down to the business of learning. So that's what alternative education is about. That's what targeted service is about. We love what we do. We do it well. We have so many stories to tell. We appreciate your time. And you can see in my brochure, we put our time and our money into kids and people, not into our media. Thank you very much.
Ms. Weber, thank you so much. And we do have a few questions now for Ms. Warner, Ms. Johnson, Ms. Weber. So, Representative Breinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, this isn't so much a question, but because Kathy Johnson's from Mankato, I had to take 30 seconds to brag about our community. But I just want to say that, you know, in the many years I've been involved in public education, the Alternative Learning Center has been really at the heart of innovation in our community in terms of creating community partnerships, addressing the needs of struggling students. And I think if we're all listening carefully today, even though we're talking about alternative programming, we should see ways in which what we've learned through ALCs reflect back on the needs of our mainstream schools. The lessons that are being learned about bullying or the need for a flexible day or individual learning plans. Struggling students are all around us, or we wouldn't be facing the graduation gaps and achievement gaps that we're facing. So I hope we listen in a really open-minded way and understand how what our ALCs have learned does reflect back on the needs of our schools as a whole.
Thank you, Representative Breiner. Very excellent comments. Representative Radenovich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't know who to best direct this question to, but I also appreciate ALCs. My brother finished school at an ALC. In Crosby Ironton, we had an alternative learning center that was in a separate building off campus, and eventually, due to budget constraints, that building was vacated and the program was integrated into the school. My question is, given the characteristics of the students that end up in an ALC and the reasons that they have left the traditional classroom, do you find that facilities integrated onto campus at mainstream institutions are better, or do you think that sort of an off-campus approach is better, or is it a negligible difference? And could you also speak to any difficulties that ALC programs would face in budgetary cuts and how you guys kind of hold your weight within those discussions?
Ms. Weber.
I think, is it protocol to pull somebody from the audience?
Sure.
I will give you my answer. I think that there's so many, when I talk about community resources and it's different by community, one of the things that alternative programs look different based on the community. I think that it's different by community, and in some places, school within a school ALCs do just fine.
Mm-hmm.
In some places, like you said, there can be off-campus can be a benefit. When you look at the state alternative programs, there's a continuum of services, and it depends on the community how that is best served.
I would just like to comment.
Ms. Beeland?
Thank you for your question. I would just like to comment that off-campus usually works better. There's a reason why students leave or are pushed out from their regular high school, and many are not welcome back into that school. It has not been a good experience for them, so they perform better, are more comfortable, have better relationships if they are away from their regular high school. There, I would say it's a minority where it's working well within the school, especially at the senior high level. Thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Oh, thank you, Chair Marquardt. I just wanted to put in a compliment for Oakland, which I was a part of for 25 years, in addition to my regular classroom duties, and to point to the fact that an effective teacher is still most important in an alternative setting. And what I found, even though I came out of the regular system during the summer or after school, that many of our staff were not from within the system, so they were a fresh face for the student, and they had that special ability to relate to these students who had either failed courses or had other issues during their regular school day. It is a wonderful opportunity for our students to achieve. And I'm so glad that the program has, I retired in 2000, has advanced so much that now you're tracking MCA results, because we weren't doing a good job of that yet when I retired, and it's good to see that continuity. So thank you very much for your work. And if Steve Allen is in the audience, he was my boss, and he was quite an innovator, and I appreciated learning from him.
Thank you, Representative
Selzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. First of all, I'd like to compliment the presenters so far and on the wonderful work that you're doing and all the partnering that you're doing. That's is really beneficial for our students. Ms. Bylan, I noted that you answered another question saying that it's hard to even track where the students go, you know, from site to site. Do you have any thoughts on how we could improve that? Would that be more helpful if the students, if we knew where they had been, if we could track them throughout the system? And then my second question is, Ms. Weber, that's wonderful that so many students come back to you. So mobility doesn't appear to be an issue in the Detroit, your service area. I'm wondering if in greater Minnesota there is an issue with student mobility, and either one of you could respond to that. Thank you.
I should clarify. There is the transient population. When I'm talking about the students who come back to us, it would be those students who left because of the interventions. And to clarify that, if a student is continuing to use chemicals and they continue to come to school under the influence, our expectation is eventually, after multiple interventions and staffings with parents and staffings with chemical health counselors, they continue to use and refuse to quit, we will say, you're not ready to learn. When you're ready, come back. Mm. That's what we're talking about, those types of interventions. Eventually in our program, when we're intervention-based, we will say at some point, if you're not ready to learn, when you're ready, come back. Those types of students. If they're not ready to work on an attendance plan, if you're not ready to work, at some point we'll say, if you're not ready, come back. Students who won't come. So every once in a while you'll have those students, and even in a traditional program, where they won't come for 10 to 15 days and then show up. You know, those types of students who haven't committed. We have a transient population everywhere in Minnesota right now. And that even came up in the auditor's report with those students who are changing schools at least once a year or more. That's a growing concern across the nation. That happens in rural Minnesota also.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your testimony. Appreciate that. So,
and now I would like to introduce our students.
We have some students.
And we have four students who would like to offer some brief comments. And our first one is Aubrey Campbell, who's a student at the Hopkins Learning Center.
Ms. Campbell, welcome, and if you would introduce yourself.
My name is Audrey Campbell, and I'm a senior at the Hopkins High School Alternative Program. I just want to thank you for letting me testify today, not only for my alternative program, but alternative programs all around Minnesota. I would like to start with talking about how when I was in junior high in the first year of my high school, I struggled with chemical dependency, and I had failed most of my freshman classes. If not, I was sliding by. And so when I entered my sophomore year, I decided to get sober, and I decided to try something else, and the academics, like the mainstream academics, were not working anymore. I was too far behind. I did not understand the curriculum because I had never shown up to school, and I had failed so many classes. So talking with Scott Neiman, who is my counselor at Hopkins Alternative Program, we decided to give it a try, and I was kind of desperate for an academic change. And so I joined in my sophomore year, and I've been there ever since. And entering in, my GPA was 0.9, and now I've raised it to 2.9. I'm completely caught up on my credits, and I actually plan to graduate a little bit early this year. Also, I plan to attend Augsburg College, which is a liberal arts school, next year. So alternative education has really given me the opportunity to change not only like my life outside of school, but my life inside of school as well. And the great thing about the Hopkins Alternative Program is that it's a school within a school. So I didn't have to change my location. I go to the same exact high school I went to before. I just go to different classrooms. We have smaller class sizes. My relationships with my teachers are a lot more personal. They all know I'm in recovery, so they all can keep me accountable. And I think it's just really, I know that if I didn't have that opportunity to have a different type of educational environment, I would not be graduating on time. And I would have fallen too far behind, and I wouldn't have like had the motivation to keep moving forward. I also just wanted to talk about my summer school experience a little bit, too. When I was a sophomore, I was admitted to the psych ward and had missed finals week, and so I had failed two more classes. And I had the opportunity to make those up in summer school as well, which is putting me on the track to graduate on time, too. So I just think that, like, those opportunities for us students, like, to change and to not have our mistakes in the past hinder our further education is really great, because then it's like we don't have to handle those consequences throughout our whole entire high school career. We've made a decision, we want to change, and now we have the opportunities and the resources to do those things. And I think it's really important, because I don't think that every student learns the same way. And I don't think everybody can sit in a classroom and take notes and just feed it back to people. And I think that with the education that I've received, at least, it's really great, because it's like interactive and my teachers know who I am. I'm not just a number or a statistic or a face. And so that's one thing that I've really appreciated. Also, I'm part of the MAPSTARS program, which is the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs, and I've been elected to be the state officer this year, which has allowed me to further my leadership abilities and with the career preparation as well. I'm a part of the work experience program at my school, so I receive credit for having a job, which is really nice as well. And I work with Sheila Getz, who is our work experience counselor, and she helped me put my first resume together. She prepared me for interviews. And so all those opportunities have been so great. And I think that in a mainstream environment, for me personally, I don't know if those opportunities would have been presented. So I would just like to thank you again for letting me testify. And with that, I'm done.
Ms. Campbell, thank you so much. Ms. Erickson.
I'm Ella. Thank you for being here, by the way. I'm 16 and a junior in high school. I started at Detroit Lakes ALC this year. And I struggled with regular high school teaching methods and didn't get along well with the students, teachers. My mom also died in 2009 from long-term complications with diabetes. And a year later, the grief and depression really hit me. And I transferred to online school because I thought that would fit me better. It did not go great, obviously. And I was in the program for 2 years, but really struggled to apply myself, and I received no credits. Since I was already 2 years behind, I felt I would never graduate, and I had too much pride to start at the high school in Yulin again. I was debating dropping out when my dad heard about the ALC. The ALC sometimes get a bad reputation, so I was hesitant to go, but my dad talked me into visiting and going over the program and how it would benefit me. I decided I had nothing to lose, so I gave it a try. I drive 45 minutes each day, twice, and I stay till 5 every day to work to get back in education and get me on track for graduation and make it a reality again. Seat-based, after-school, and summer programs are making graduating on time more doable. I'm extremely grateful for this program for not only giving me an education back, but also giving me a second family that understands struggles and losses and supports each other no matter what. I've seen how the Teenage Parent Program, Partners in Parenting and Recovery, has helped many other students, and I hope these programs will continue to be available for every other student. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson, very much. I think we have Ms. Holmer is next. And we'll ask Ms. Campbell and Ms. Erickson to stay up front. I think we'll have enough seats there, so then when we have questions and so forth. So, Ms. Holmer, introduce yourself and please begin.
I'm Hannah, and I'm 18. I was supposed to graduate with the class of 2012, which was last year. I started the seat-based program at the ALC this year. I tried a few different schools. I went to the Park Rabbits High School, and I've tried online school. Online school was a school that got me behind. It didn't work out for me. I just didn't apply myself good enough. The year 2010, I quit public school, and in 2011, I decided I wanted to go back until I found out I was pregnant. I then decided I was going to stick with online. April 2012, I heard about the ALC from a friend. I decided to go there and apply and just see what happens. I started out with the Independent Study Program.
which helped me get 2 credits in just 1 month, and there was no way I could have done that in just a public high school. I then got introduced to the CPAs program, which I started this year. I love the teachers and friends I get to be around every day with that program. The ALC offers quite a few awesome programs for us there, such as the work experience program, and I use that. That helps me with credits also. Partners in Parenting is another program that is awesome for teen moms such as myself. It gives you the one-on-one time you need with your child. The ALC has helped me out so much to get towards graduation. I would have never been able to do that without them. I would have never finished out high school. I would probably went and got my GED if I wouldn't have heard about the ALC. I commit myself so much to the ALC, I drive 35 miles every day just to work towards my diploma. Without the ALC and the teachers that work at the Detroit Lakes ALC, there's no way I could have done it. Me also being a teen mom has helped me finish out. I'm a year late on graduation. I have an 11-month-old son, and if it wasn't for the ALC, I wouldn't be getting a diploma in just a few short months. I hope the ALC can be an opportunity for a lot more people out there that have struggles in life just like we do.
Thank you, Ms. Homer. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Toth?
Toth? Hi. My name is Zachary Toth. I'm a 19-year-old father who just actually graduated from the St. Francis ALC. I'm going to start off with my beginning in my high school career. My freshman year, I attended the local high school in St. Francis, and I only passed a few of my classes. I wasn't very devoted to school and whatnot. My sophomore year, I decided to change it up and try a different school. I went to Minnesota Online High School, and again, I was on the same track and only graduated passed a handful of my classes. The next year, my junior year, I decided to go back to the St. Francis High School, and repetitive, I was only passing some of my classes, just getting by the skin of my teeth, just barely getting by. And a try-in, I was told by my local high school that I should probably try the ALC's night program to try to make up some of my credits. I started going there, and after only a couple months, I had really taken a liking to it. And I had started talking to my counselors and whatnot and trying to get into the ALC. And it was a pain, but after a while, I finally got into it. And so I completed my junior year of my, the last try of my junior year in the ALC. And I started getting into that and really liking it, and I decided to go into summer school, make up more credits, and that really helped me. My senior year, I started doing quite well, getting through it. I would bounce between programs as I had a job, and I just had a daughter during that time, so I would go between the day program from normal school times or after school programs from 2:15 or 2:45 to 4:30, and I'd switch to go to noon to 4:30, trying to get my credits, and I hadn't graduated on time, so I come back this year, and since I had just got 50-50 custody of my daughter, I couldn't attend school like I normally would, and they helped me out with that. So since I have her every other week, I would come in full-time 1 week, the week I didn't have my daughter, the week I did have my daughter, and the week that I didn't have my daughter, I would come in at noon and work till 4:30 so that I could go to work after, and that allowed me to make sure all my responsibilities were met. And after a few months of that, actually last Thursday, I had just graduated. So it really helped me out.
Congratulations on the graduation. Well, thank you for your wonderful testimony, and thank you for sharing those stories. And I commend you for your hard work and successes. It's fantastic. And I think we have a couple questions. Representative Selzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I represent the Hopkins School District, and I want to, first of all, thank all of you for coming today, and you are all very courageous young people, and I really compliment you on the work you've done towards meeting your goal. And
Ms. Campbell, I have a particular, first of all, I want to say, since Representative Breinhardt took just a minute, that that Hopkins has a wonderful ALC program, and I know Mr. Nyman, and it's just wonderful to hear the great experience that you had in what I know is an outstanding program. And I am delighted that you are going on to Augsburg College, and I think that it's wonderful to have your high school diploma, and that is a real milestone. It's also in the, it's also very helpful to go on to post-secondary, and I'm wondering if that was part of the program, encouraging you to go on to some type of post-secondary?
Ms. Campbell?
It wasn't, but I had decided that once I got sober and I had gotten my GPA up so high, and Scott approached me and he was like, well, what are you going to do after you graduate? And I kind of thought community college was my only option. But as I did more research, I was like, well, maybe I can go to a four-year school. And so I kind of just applied and I got in, so I'm really excited to continue with that.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You bet. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to say congratulations to all of you. And I'm the type of individual that although you learn from your mistakes and experiences, you don't spend a lot of time looking over your shoulder, but spend more time looking forward. My question is directed towards Ms. Campbell. You made a couple of comments that piqued some curiosity for me. You mentioned that you started falling behind because you weren't showing up, and presumably from your substance abuse. But I'm curious to ask you, what caused you to, identify that you had a problem? Was the school responsive in your absenteeism or your truancy? Or was it your parents that got you involved? If you could just talk a little bit about what started to turn on the light for you.
Ms. Campbell.
I don't really want to go too personal with this, but I have family who is in recovery, and so when I was attending Alateen, which is for children with alcoholic parents or family members, and I kind of had like a moment of realization when they were talking about the alcoholic, and I could relate to that and not being the person who was involved with them. So my mom didn't, and the school didn't really have anything to do with my sobriety. I kind of decided to do it by myself. I decided to give it a try at least. It was kind of at that point where it was either like, I'm going to keep going and I'm going to die, or I'm going to change. So,
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what I'm hearing is that even though you were truant, the school wasn't responsive that you were absent.
No, they were.
They were.
Yeah, and with the alternative program that I'm in now, there's an attendance plan, so we can only miss 2 days out of each grading period. Otherwise, we start to lose credit, so it keeps us accountable to be in school and to keep continuing to do the work in our classes.
Okay. Thank you very much for that, and best wishes to all of you.
We have time for one more question. Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the questions I have is regarding rigor, and it's nice to hear that you're going to Augsburg College. That's excellent. Did you feel that you were challenged in your program, and if you wanted to go back to, I don't know how many students go back to mainstream, did you feel like you would have the opportunity to integrate back into the regular curriculum? Can you just tell me a little bit if you feel you have the classes and the preparation you need to advance to your next goals?
Is this for who? Is this for anyone particular?
Anyone on there, yep.
Anyone care to answer that one? All right, Ms. Campbell, go ahead.
All right. I think that with entering college next year, I feel like I'm pretty prepared from the education that I received at Hopkins, especially because we're a school inside of a school. So depending on what credits I need, what credits I'm behind on, I can take some alternative classes, and then I can also take some mainstream classes. And at the beginning of the year, I was actually in an advanced placement class for ceramics, for pottery. So I mean, I have taken both, and as I get caught up on my credits, I find that it's a lot easier to go back into mainstream, just because I've like learned all the information that everyone else already knows. Mm-hmm. So I think it gets easier, and I think I'm pretty well prepared for next year.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Really appreciate that, and best wishes. Thank you. Well, members, while all of you have been bragging about various programs, as the chair, I get the last word, because the superintendent here is from Detroit Lakes area I represent, Mr. Doug Froke. And, you know, it's kind of like when you're out buying a car. You don't pay any attention to ads until you really, like, look for a car, and then you start paying attention. And when I was named chair of this committee, I met with area superintendents, and Mr. Froke starts talking about the ALC program they have in Detroit Lakes, which I have talked numerous times with folks there, but I was not aware of how expansive and kind of the model that is set out there. And so I'm very familiar with Detroit Lakes, and we have some folks from Moorhead here, Area Learning Center also, and just as you heard testimony from throughout, the models here and throughout the state are just fantastic, and here's an excellent example. So, Mr. Froke, you have the last word today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Doug Froke. I'm the superintendent at Detroit Lakes. I've been there for 6 years. I've been in the state of Minnesota as an acting superintendent for the past 17 years. I would reintroduce Lisa Weber as the director of our ALC programming, and sometimes you hear the old comment about who's your best teacher, and when I came to Detroit Lakes, Lisa Weber was my best teacher, and she was the best teacher in helping me understand alternative learning. We have one of the things that you find out, and you've seen before you this morning, is there's a whole lot of commitment going on that came before you this morning. There's a passion here on many, many different fronts. I don't think that I can even sit here and do justice to the four kids that came up and sat before you, because you saw a whole lot of commitment. They have a passion, they have a drive to get their degree. And their degree is important to them, irregardless of the obstacles that they've been faced with. And these were just the examples you heard this morning. And so then you heard testimony from our adults, the folks that are leading our alternative learning centers across the state. They're very passionate people on a very individual basis. And when I talk about that, they're very much in tune to the individual needs of kids in their buildings and in their programs. And so as a result then, As leaders and those folks tasked with the responsibility of carrying out state law, that being school boards, superintendents, and those of you tasked with making state law, there's a commitment, and a commitment and a philosophical understanding that the K-12 model, or maybe I should say the PK-12 model, doesn't work for everybody. And I think we as adults have to understand that the typical model of showing up at 8 o'clock and walking out the door at 3 o'clock isn't built for everybody, and so that's one of the first lessons I think I had to learn was that very difference that some kids exhibit, and the other thing was that Not only is it the model different, but as we look at how our classrooms and ALCs function, it isn't stand and deliver anymore. And the kids who are students at the alternative learning centers across our state are very much built that way. They're very active students in terms of wanting to be participants, much like they're participants in a larger scale in their own lives. So, as we take a look at what we're trying to do from an ALC perspective, it's very much a commitment going forward. Not only talk about philosophical commitment, but we talk about financial commitment. In Detroit Lakes, every month our board receives about a 20-page enrollment report, and in time dating back to 2003. We could see the trend, and of course I wasn't there at that time, but there we could see a trend that we were losing kids to drop out. And there was a financial commitment made by the board to create an ALC. And as such, then, whenever we attempt to do things like that, we want to make sure and do them correctly. And just as you've been hearing, you heard three components to the ALC. First would be the seat-based program, which is basically run in Detroit Lakes Monday through Thursday. And that's go to class throughout the course of the day. And then on Fridays, I thought I'd throw this little piece in. The ALC is very much about community partnerships. And on Fridays, then, that's a service learning day. Those folks go out into the community and work to better the community and make it a better place to live. We teach that skill. And so that was kind of an interesting piece. The second part of that, of our ALC program, is credit recovery. You've heard that mentioned a couple times this morning as well. Graduation rate is critical for us as a state. We know we're all watching that number. Credit recovery programs are critical to meeting your goal of wanting to be one of the best states in the nation where graduation rate is concerned. And then third, targeted services. Targeted services, as Mrs. Weber pointed out, we've been somewhat creative in allowing to function under the law the idea that we would provide services to districts in outstate Minnesota almost as far as 2 hours away, where we hire their staff on our pay schedule in Detroit Lakes to teach their kids and provide after-school programming, especially, as they say, in the targeted services area, where we look at reading and math. But take a look at this. Those targeted services programming, kind of an interesting dynamic in that there is an after-school program for a community. That's very important for our young parents and for our young students, that they have somewhere to go in some of our smaller communities across the state. Okay? The other piece would be just a constant, again, work on betterment in the area of reading and math. We go right at finding what the kids' needs are as it relates to targeted services. So at issue for us, then, is the proposal that our extended time revenue could be rolled in to the basic skills revenue. That's a concern for us. And the extended time revenue does help support alternative learning centers, and it would be very bad if the extended time revenue were rolled into another revenue source. I'll tell you why. There are districts that will take that extended time revenue, and they will use it for other things inside the typical classroom day. Things like after-school programming, that will go away in some of our communities because the fact that as we look at what districts are doing from a fiscal standpoint, they'll use that to run it. They'll use that new influx of basic skills revenue via extended time to support existing programming. We're concerned about that. We've done very well. Our schools that are partners with us in targeted services like what's happening. They like what we do. They like the accountability pieces that we've employed and deployed in some of those schools to make sure that we're targeting our individual children. So we would ask that you look at that issue very carefully, and good luck with your decision. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Broken. We have one question there. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Superintendent, I apologize. I stepped out, and maybe you touched on this. But what I heard of your presentation, as you identified dropouts as an issue, you shifted to an ALC, developing an ALC as a response.
That's correct.
And that's all good. But it does provoke me the question of what initiatives have you put in to prevent the dropping out to begin with. It's great to catch the kids when they've dropped out, and I certainly recognize that some students have issues, some family have issues that are certainly outside the school's doing and are insurmountable at that point. But what initiatives are you putting in place to support and assist students to stay in the regular program, to not drop out beforehand?
Mr. Frohl.
Largely, what we look at is just initially when the program was created, this was another vehicle to catch kids, another option, and that's what the ALC provides. When you take a look at the components of what we do relative to some of the programming that Mrs. Weber has in the area of the recovery school, which is a school inside the school of the ALC, she mentioned that earlier. Then not only the independent learning program, which is also a credit recovery based program. There were a couple of those types of things that took place inside the Partners in Parenting program that were inside the school that we thought maybe covered a range of issues that we were seeing at that time. We've gotten better as a school district too in terms of interventions that we use across our K-12 spectrum. We're working together collaboratively as a teaching staff and an administrative staff to identify those kids who maybe not, and it isn't just isolated to the ALC, but throughout the course of our system, to work to intervene better and faster than what we did back in 2003. So things have changed a little bit, but back at that time, what we tried to do was that we were looking for something to catch kids, because in Detroit Lakes and the surrounding area, Frazee, Lake Park, Audubon, Waubun, Pelican Rapids, we didn't have the ALC. Moorhead at that time, I believe, had that. We didn't. And there were just so many kids that we were losing. And I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but Mrs. Weber could probably help too.
Ms. Weber?
The other thing is, there's a model when ALCs were created originally in 87, it was students drop out and they go somewhere else to go to the ALC. When we developed our ALC, our ALC staff sits on the student assistance team with the high school. And when we talk about our students, we talk about students at the high school before they come to the ALC. And we implement interventions as we go along. The other thing is, when I talked about some of our programming, after-school programming, we go to where students are at. So we provide some of our students at the high school, or services after school at the high school. We provide summer school programming at the high school. So some of our programming isn't just pull out far away pulling. We layer programming. So I don't know if that helps you. I think that when we look at educational programming, one of the things that we are hoping to transition towards, and I think it was referred to an earlier question, is that when we look at educational models now, one of the transitions we're making is this program sits here, and this program sits here, and this program sits here, is we need to start looking at educational programming as layering. What's best for students? How do we meet the needs of students? And how do we start moving back and forth and give options for kids to move back and forth, not drop out and go over there to that ALC? Is what's best for kids, and how do we meet their needs? And when they drop out, then they go to an ALC. Is where do we move kids in and out, and how do we meet their needs as we go along? Is that
yeah. Well,
thank you
so much. And
if I could, too, sorry, just I just remembered that the impact on the Detroit Lakes schools of a roll-in. Currently, we have about 150 ADMs of extended time. Now, keep in mind that would be the most a student can generate is 0.2 of an ADM, and we generate 150 ADMs. So that would have you can tell if you take that times the $4,000 allotment per ADM for extended time. excuse me, that's a $600,000 hit to the Detroit Lakes schools on a roll-in on a worst-case scenario. So it significantly impacts what we do and the programming we provide. So.
Thank you, and we will be talking about that issue on the governor's proposal much more. We have one bill to do yet, so thank you so much for all of your testimony. This was wonderful.
Thank you.
So
thank you for the work you do.
Ms. Weber, thank you, Mr. Broke. We now have House File 165.
they are for as soon as this committee is open.
Yep.
And neither is the long line.
Representative Slocum, would you like to move your bill? Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I would like to move House File 165 be laid over.
We could. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 165 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Education Finance Bill.
Very good. And you also have an author's amendment to put the bill in its proper order?
I do.
If you would move that, please.
I would like to move the A1 amendment to House Bill 165.
Okay, members, you should have the A1 amendment. The author has moved that. And for first-time members, what we typically do on amendments when the authors want to put it in the shape that they have, we don't debate that. We just approve that and then immediately go to the bill. So all those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Those of you who know me know that I wholeheartedly support public school alternatives and choice, public school choice for parents, for kids. I'm not much into the factory model for schools. I think kids are pretty unique, and they come to school with a unique set of circumstances, and you've just heard some of the circumstances they come to school with. These recovery schools are very important in districts and on the edge of districts. They're schools that serve kids needing a place to catch up academically in an environment that respects and supports their recovery. These are our kids. They're ours. Because addiction issues, special circumstances, happen to your kids, my kids, cut across race, cut across economic boundaries. You know, we talk at length about an achievement gap, and it's there and it's critical. But we also have a really critical graduation gap at this point also. And these recovery schools help kids graduate. It's just that simple. These are our kids. It's a great bill. I think you should vote for it, and we're going to go through it briefly today.
Please introduce yourself and explain the bill.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dozlund, and I represent the intermediate school districts. And as a lobbyist who's around the Capitol a lot, I couldn't have asked for a better setup on the discussion of this bill from the students that testified. So I do appreciate their comments. I represent the intermediate school districts. They are three of them in the metropolitan area, the South Metro, the East Metro, and the West Metro. And for those of you who are here today, there's about six of you who have individual school districts that are members of intermediates. Intermediates provide a number of different services to their member districts, a wide ranging of services from online learning, special education, career and tech programs. But one of the intermediates, the 287 intermediate program, intermediate district, runs a recovery program in Eden Prairie. And so I am working with the intermediates and a number of other recovery schools to provide some additional funding. There are also recovery schools that are through traditional ALC programs in a traditional school district, and there's also recovery programs in charter schools. And I have a testifier to talk about the day-to-day work that they do. Just real quickly, this bill does request some additional funding for recovery schools to help address the unique needs that students who are transitioning from treatment back into the K-12 system. That creates two components. One, it increases the ADM for students moving from a treatment center so that they are allowed to have some additional time in a recovery school program for credit recovery and things such as that. And it also provides some additional funding to help recovery schools pay for the staff that they need to help students who are in recovery, such as drug and alcohol dependency treatment counselors. And we have Paul McGlynn, who runs the Sobriety High School in Burnsville, who's going to talk about his program and the work they do with students.
Okay, and before we go forward, members, we do not have a fiscal note on this bill. It's been requested but not received yet. And also at this time, I'd like to introduce some 12th graders that we have here in the audience. We're honored to have the 12th grade students from Minnesota Transitions Charter High School. And they're participating in the Minnesota Historical Society's Capitol Historic Sites voice of the people, your role in Minnesota government tour and education program. So if you would please stand so we could recognize you, and thank you so much for being here. Thank you. Please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and all Education Finance Committee members. Thank you for allowing me the honor of testifying before you today. My name is Paul McGlynn. I am the Executive Director of Sobriety High Charter School, which is one of several recovery schools in Minnesota. I'm testifying today on behalf of all Minnesota recovery schools that serve students struggling with addiction issues. Recovery schools offer students grades 9 through 12 a safe, sober place to recover from drug and alcohol addiction, and at the same time receive an accredited high school education. Young people who have found successful sobriety in addiction treatment centers must eventually return into their normal lives. In this return, they are faced with the very daunting situation of re-enrolling in their regular high schools, where they will be exposed to the same environment and people who they used drugs with before their treatment. The temptation to fall back into their drug use is often too overwhelming to resist. Recovery schools offer a deeply supportive alternative high school setting for these young, courageous students who have committed themselves to sobriety. These schools work true miracles in the lives of young people and their families. The most significant miracle being that these young people actually have a school that is a safe, sober, and recovery-driven community where they can go every day and earn their high school diploma. For 8 years, I have seen the wonderful hope and healing that these schools bring to young people and their families. I am grateful to be part of such a mission. However, the mission of recovery schools is one that needs many resources, such as recovery counselors, social workers, psychologists, and other health services. In order to genuinely serve all the needs of their students, they must offer many services that are beyond the scope of educational state aid to a public school. Thus, recovery schools often suffer from financial struggles. Some of the significant and tragic consequences of this financial strain on recovery schools are the incredible loss of recovery schools over the last 4 years. In 2008-2009, there were 13 recovery schools in Minnesota with 490 seats available to students. Now, in 2012-2013, there are only 7 schools left with only 278 seats available. This is a loss of 43% of available seats for students in recovery in only 4 years. In 2011, approximately 5,500 young people between 12 to 18 years of age were admitted to substance abuse dependency treatment in Minnesota. That means that in 2012, less than 5% of these young people will have access to a recovery school due to the precipitous loss of seats available. Clearly, recovery schools face a tentative future. The Minnesota Recovery School Task Force is working to ensure that recovery schools are a viable educational option for students in chemical dependency recovery. Recovery schools are mentioned as a promising practice in both the state and federal drug control policies. If we truly want to improve outcomes for our young people who have made the brave choice to embrace recovery, it is extremely important to keep recovery schools open and viable. Today, I am here to implore your Education Finance Committee and the Minnesota House and Senate to pass this bill, which would allow Minnesota recovery schools the financial support they need to serve young people who are choosing a sober, healthy life. Thank you for your time and consideration in this matter.
Thank you. A question. Representative Slocum, I mentioned right now there's 278 students involved in the program. Sounds like that's what Mr. McGlynn said, 278. With the increased funding, and we don't know for sure what that would be, how many students would you expect then to be served? I mean, what's the goal, moving it from 278 to what?
Fill all the seats. Fill all the seats available would be the goal.
And what would that number be?
In all the schools, I cannot answer. Okay. But for our school, it would be about 120.
Mr. McGlynn, additional? Or
nope, that's total. Additional would be 60.
Okay.
60 additional.
About one, all right. And I guess what the typical classroom, what's the staff? What does that look like? I mean, who are the staff members? Counselors or?
We have core curriculum teachers in all subjects. We also provide LADCs. Those are licensed alcohol and drug counselors. Okay. We also provide social workers. So a typical staffing looks like for us, a school day where all kids have English, math, social studies, science. As well, throughout the day, they meet individually with licensed alcohol and drug counselors as needs arise. And then they have meetings throughout the day, small groups that talk about recovery issues that they're facing every day in and outside of the school. So that's our typical staffing. That is not the exact model for all recovery schools. That is our model.
Okay. I will ask at this time, is there anyone from the public who would like to testify for or against House File 165 as amended? Okay, seeing none, we have time for Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm supportive of the bill, and we have students from District 11 who have attended the schools regularly and have done very well. But I want to talk a little bit about a broader issue, and that has to do with the funding. And, you know, whether this is a sort of a health program with an educational component or an educational program with a health component, one way or another, I think some of the funding for these schools should be coming out of Health and Human Services. And I think it's a broader issue that we have to be looking at in many things, not only this particular program, but everything from ECFE to some of the other programs that we handle on this committee. So I just wanted to make that as a general statement, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you. All right, Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Wills.
I just had a question. You said you don't have a fiscal note yet, and so I'm curious. I'd like to see that information when it's available, and then also wondering if funding for this particular program was included in the governor's budget proposal. Do you know if it was?
Representative Slocum, or?
I'm going to refer to
Ms. Dozlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wills. As soon as a fiscal note is available, we will make sure to provide it to the committee members. And no, the governor did not include any provisions such as this in his bill. But to be fair, we have not approached the governor's office yet about this issue. It was something that came, you know, in December. We're working hard to try to get legislation ready, but certainly we'll connect with the governor's office on this issue. And I have had conversations with Department of Education as well.
Representative Quam, and we have a minute 23 seconds left of the meeting I see here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and in conjunction with previous testimony about funding being designated instead of rolled in, I noticed this bill rolls into the general fund. Having been involved with a special education district and ALCs and other programs, one of the things we appreciated is there were funds from health department, federal, etc., that we could use for programs. I think by having it separate so that we can, fund the need, have it go to the host district instead of having it go into a general formula, that we might be able to more easily guarantee that the funds would stay with the program, fund it, and make it easier to see just how well we did in response to the funding, and then we could more easily adjust the funding as needed and as the load and seats filled, as opposed to when you roll it into the formula, I think you lose some of that granularity. And I think it's key that programs that make a difference and are highly effective are by themselves and can be appropriately funded and given the attention. So I would hope that we could make some sort of an adjustment to that.
Thank you for those comments, and we will certainly take that into consideration. Representative Slocum moves to renew to lay over House File 165 as amended for possible inclusion into the omnibus report. So all those in favor say aye. Oh, no, we don't have to vote on that. No, forget that. I'm a rookie here. We don't have to vote on that. So sorry about that. Just a few more points here by me. All of you members received this, and it's the governor's recommendation with a narrative, so the test will be on that tomorrow. And then a reminder, tomorrow we meet in room 200, a joint meeting with the Senate looking at the integration revenue task force report and so forth. That's one issue we need to do. So, members, thank you. We are adjourned.